Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Today's Friday, December 4th, 2020. I'm Megan.
I'm Matt.
And you're listening to The Night Owl. All right, everybody. We are out of November. We have made it to December. Sounds like I'm singing a rap song.
Coming to the end.
Yeah. I wanted to start out with telling everybody that Matt and I are safe. We're happy. We've been wearing our masks, and we are relaxing today, this week, because we went to see Matt and Matt's parents for post-Thanksgiving hangout. I think it was a little bit of a COVID scare with Matthew. He was exposed to someone at work, and so you went to get a rapid test. Can you explain how that went?
Yeah, I got a nasal test there, so it's a 15-minute test. There's several of them. I think there's kind of like a saliva one. But this is one where they take the Q-tip and put it up there.
Right up your nose.
You feel it.
How far up do they go in your nose?
I mean, I'd say they go up there. I mean, like I said, you feel it. It's up past the nose and in there, but the idea
is like a textured swab.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is that they're trying to get any kind of cells up there potentially. And as you stated there, it turned out to be negative. I've been negative for other signs as well.
Yeah, and I think also that means, I mean, I've done the one that takes a couple days, and I've only done that a few times, but I guess I'm probably good too, because you and I live together, and we're very touchy-feely, and if you're negative, that means I'm good.
Yeah, most likely. I mean, you haven't had any symptoms either, so that would be one sign.
And I know some people can be carriers and never get sick from it,
exactly. It's not a telltale sign, and we're not saying that's 100%, and definitely that's just us and our decision, and we kind of put those, weighted that risk, and did what we did, and so far.
You needed to do that because you didn't want to infect me and you didn't want to have to quarantine within our apartment. And we were still able to go see your parents the day after Thanksgiving. We wanted to leave Wednesday and stay till like Saturday or Friday night, but we were still able to do that. And your dad and I started a new project. As many of you guys know, I like to paint and I'm a photographer. His father is a farmer, and he painted some farm quilts, which is basically any size of wood, any size piece of wood that you paint geometric shapes or brightly colored patterns on, and you hang it on your barn for everyone to see. And he and I started working on one when we were there, and I was obsessed with it. Any downtime I had, I went down to the basement, and he was really surprised.
Yeah, you did your due diligence. I mean, you were very meticulous about it, and a lot of it was freehand. A lot of it needed to be that kind of detail, and I thought it came out great.
Yeah, I thought it was really fun doing it. I definitely want to keep doing that. I might actually buy my own pieces of wood and start designing on them. It'll be a different type of feel than painting on canvas, because canvas is just more of a paper-like substance and texture, and whereas wood, I think you'd have to be able to know what stage of wood you want to get to work on. I don't think I'd want to get wood where I had to sand it and like get all the blemishes out. I think I'd want to get more of a piece of wood that's
already processed. No, I mean, there's a cost thing, and then there's also how much you want to
work on.
Put into it there. Yeah. I mean, I think
painting it white is really good to paint, and then you paint your design over it because it gives it that brightness.
You know, I kind of thought, you know, the barn quilt thing is your thing, but, you know, I saw that project.
It's your dad's thing. He's just including me in it.
I mean, I guess so. I kind of thought you and I might try the one wood project where we attempt to
do the Mod Podge.
Mod Podge. Maybe attempt to put a photo, attach it to a piece of wood and see how that goes.
You basically take photo paper, and you can either get a photo printed at a photo place with glossy paper, or you could do it. You could just buy glossy paper at Best Buy or a computer store and do it at home. And then you put the photo face down on the wood, and you get this substance glue called Mod Podge, and it's like a glue type substance, and you paint that all over the back of the photo, and then you let it sit for about, I'd say, 12 hours at the most, and then you take a sponge and you wet it down, and then you massage the wood with your fingers until it starts removing the back part of that photo. And then,
I mean, there were a couple YouTube videos on it, and a couple I mean, the one that inspired me to want to be able to, I think, do this as a project for us was just some amateur that I saw on YouTube that was just flicking around on the Xbox. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. Only 30 minutes. And
I mean, he put the glue over it to kind of.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, amateur. He said that he wasn't a professional. He's just like, hey, this is my first time doing it. Let's see. Yeah. I mean, and I thought for first time in an amateur.
But he did say to reverse the photo if you want to have it show up as the way it is on the photo. Because if you put it face down,
he did do that. He also introduced to a free program that you could go and download or get as an app that
I could just do it on a
photo editor. Yeah.
Yeah. You can just take any photo editor and reverse the photo and then print it out. Because when I was young, I used to make clothes for my Barbie doll. There was this like cool computer program that you could play where you design Barbie's clothes and then they give you this like fabric paper that you can print out the look on and then you cut it out and you put it on like you would a paper doll.
Oh, nice.
And so my grandfather was, I don't know if Computer USA is still around or CompUSA is still around, but you could go to, I don't know, you could probably go to a computer store and get
fabric paper. Probably anymore.
Yeah, you could get fabric paper and print out a look or a photo on that. So I think that you could get glossy paper as well. CompUSA had every type of paper you could think of that you could print onto so that you didn't have to go to a specialty store or a printing store. Because if you want to get it done, it's actually pretty expensive. Granted, I'm not saying it's not worth it. Those people work really hard to do that work for you. And I've been to paper art galleries before, where they have these giant laser printers and like they can put anything you want, any type of format of photo. It can be an old photo from like the 80s up until the 4K that you have now. And they print it out and you can have it any size you want. You can stretch it out onto a canvas or a piece of wood or whatever. But if you're trying to save some money with quarantine, DIY is the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a DIYer, there's a lot of great stuff out there like that that really does make it
easier.
Easy.
Yeah.
And
I mean, thank God for the 21st century that we can do that. I just remember being able to print out on fabric paper at home. That was cool. It was like I didn't have to buy Barbie any clothes. I just could print it out onto a, and all the Barbies are pretty much the same size, so you didn't have to worry about scaling it or changing the size of the design. But that was what we did over the holiday. So I hope you guys send us your experiences with, the quarantine and celebrating the holiday. I know that before we left, I did phone in and FaceTime with some family, and that was really nice, being able to talk to cousins that lived away, far away from me, and calling my grandma, my mom, and it was really nice. It was definitely different, but it definitely felt good, even if I wasn't physically there with them, to be able to check in and see that they were okay. And unlike Matthew, I don't call my family or my mom and my grandparents every day, but I do FaceTime and I message them on Facebook. My grandmother's 93 and she can use Messenger and text, so that's kind of cool. But yeah, so that was what we did for Thanksgiving. And then Matthew and I finally got our love seat that came in. So that's nice. We were able to have both of our couches now. So that gives us a little bit more room to spread out. And I think we're going to be working on the kitchen next, maybe looking for some furniture. So as soon as that happens, I think I will start posting some photos in the description, some links to that. But we wanted to bring some news to you guys this week, and I think we were going to try and stay away from the political stuff. We might have some COVID news, but I have some really fun articles that I wanted to share. Did you have anything interesting?
Same thing. I thought I'd stay away from some of the heavy hitter stuff. Some of you may remember in those earlier, especially in the first season, I think maybe even one in the second here as well. We have mentioned about games and toys and nostalgia and kind of what we grew up with.
That was like the tail end of our first season.
You know, and we kind of dabbled in a little bit talking about the toy museum and kind of the Hall of Fame of toys and, what did you grow up with and what did you like? Well, I kind of thought in that same vein here, I would keep it up with something ironic is a game that, to be honest, I did not play as a kid, but I'm so familiar with because I can remember get-togethers with my folks, and the adults, certain times, they would play Trivial Pursuit.
See, I've never played that. I've heard of it.
I mean, I would agree. That's not even a game we have. Even as I became an adult, it's not really a game I play. But now there's so many versions of it. It's definitely a game that piqued my interest. So kind of in advancing in that nostalgia there and going with those board games, I thought I'd discuss a little bit about, you know, where did Trivial Pursuit come from? It's not like kind of Clue or Candyland, which we talked about, which have been around since like the 40s and 50s. But it is, I would say, you know, like I said, it's not necessarily a game I play, but when I think of board games, it might be 1, 2, 3 right off the top of my head that I think of. So even Time Magazine called it the biggest phenomenon in game history.
Oh, wow.
Of course, you can pick some of this up off a Wikipedia page. I'm picking this up off of a thought company here. They kind of write articles
been on there before.
Based on history and culture, based on games and inventions here. So this is it. So if you're wondering when Trivial Pursuit first came about, it was first conceived on December 15th, 1979.
Right before Christmas.
Right before Christmas there.
That's
and if
a good
you can
think, marketing strategy.
It was developed by Chris Haney and Scott Abbott. They were both Canadians. It was in Canada. And of course, if anybody.
It sounds like a Canadian game, right?
It does sound like a Canadian game. Trivial Pursuit, right? Yeah. Oh, the knowledge game.
It sounds like I will challenge you to a duel.
And of course, if you wonder, back in 1979, we had horrible weather. I mean, just snow up the wazoo. So maybe
you were
even
two.
That.
Yeah. You were 2 years old. You weren't in Canada.
So, again, if you're kind of wondering here, Haney was a high school dropout that came
makes
up with
sense.
This. So, you know, it makes sense. You know, kind of thinks about,
doesn't
you know,
doesn't mean
some,
he's not smart.
It doesn't mean you're not smart or could do
school
great things.
Was too
I mean,
cool for
look
school.
At
Einstein.
I don't know. It was
Einstein.
Einstein
dropped
high
out
drop?
When he was like 10 years old. I
Abraham
think.
Lincoln was a high school dropout.
Yep.
Harry Truman was a high school dropout.
Yep. All good guys.
So. Yeah, that cannot necessarily define you one way or another there. You can succeed here. So Scrabble.
You too could be a game master.
You too could be a game master now, huh?
There's still so many games that we haven't
thought of. If you're wondering, Scrabble was the game that inspired Trivial Pursuit.
Oh, shit. Is Scrabble older?
Scrabble, I would say, is older. Okay. So maybe the next game that we looked into. So it took a couple of investors to get this game off. And, of course, once it did, it was officially announced and trademarked as Trivial Pursuit in November 10th, 1981. So, in the 80s here, this game came out. And, like I said, I can remember, I mean, especially mid, late 80s, you know, family get-togethers. Not necessarily family get-togethers, but with friends and
you were
that
younger,
game
you were
being
probably
played.
Your cousins,
yeah.
Right? Do you need to have more than 4 people play? Or is it, like... Is it better when you have more people? Is
I would say the more
is?
People you have in teams
so have
and the
teams.
More challenging it can be.
So you and I couldn't play together. We would need teams.
No,
right?
I think you could play.
It would just be longer.
It would just either be longer or maybe not. There would be.
I
just,
bet there's a lot of cards, right? It's all cards or are there die involved?
Oh, no. There were dice involved that you had to kind of move your little thing around and then you'd
oh,
land
you
on the
characters?
Different... No, you had little pie pieces. That's what you're trying to fill.
Oh, okay. It sounds like a nice thing.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I mean, if you can remember that one episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where they have their great game.
Yeah.
It's very kind of similar to kind of that aspect of it there with pieces and the story. It kind of is interesting. It does go on to say that they had issues trying to lift it off because people were suing them based on some of the questions and answers that they were using. They're like, oh, you didn't give us permission to use us in your game.
Oh no.
Yeah, so if you're wondering, to date it is sold in at least 26 countries and 17 different languages.
Wow.
There's even a video game and an arcade and an online version. Isn't that kind of the theme with many of the games that we've talked about, especially now? It's very shocking to see like Candyland and now even Trivial Pursuit online. So very popular in the United States and in the United Kingdom. And
well,
of
that's
course,
good that it's in different versions. I mean, now with the quarantine, you can play all different. You can maybe try them all. you could try playing everything. You could try playing it on video game or online. And
yep, I mean, there are multiple versions. There's multiple levels of it. I mean, I think there's like teen version and kids version. I think there's
you can zoom and play, I bet.
Movie trivia. There's specific, like Star Wars.
You could do a Zoom party like that if you wanted to play with your friends. From
so here's to the little colored pie pieces into the game of knowledge. Trivial Pursuit.
That's cool. That's really cool. I think that we should try it, but I think if we're able to play it online, maybe we can zoom in some friends and they can play and we can move their pieces for them. Because I don't know if it's interactive where you can play online with other people.
Well, it says it's online. I mean, there's even a Lord
I'm sure
of the,
it's open,
there's
right?
even a Lord of the Rings version to country music.
That's funny because Matthew actually watched Lord of the Rings the other day.
I did.
Did you watch?
I watched Lord of the Rings there, the Fellowship of the, the first one.
Yes, that was, I remember being home and you watch it and I came back and it was still on. It's like a 3 hour
movie. It's a 3 hour movie. It is a 3 hour, but.
Buckle up and get ready when you watch it.
It is one, at least for me, because I do not watch it all the time. Matter of fact, that may have only been the second or third time I'd ever seen it completely all the way through.
You never read the box set?
I did not like the books. I was not going to read any of those.
I read the books. I thought the movies were better, honestly.
I have met...
I'm a visual person,
fanatics of this before. I mean, when I'm talking fanatics of Lord of the Rings, I guess we can kind of go on a tangent here, but, I mean, I'm talking about people that... It's amazing the number of people here in the U.S. that I've met from England that were huge Lord... This one guy... He ended up getting a divorce because of how much he loved Lord of the Rings.
His wife left him?
Yes.
Because he was obsessed with
it? He was obsessed with Lord of the Rings.
Oh, God. That's probably...
He said he had meticulously painted the inside of his house with all these, like, Lord of the Ring type things. And, Hobbit.
I don't think I would leave you for that, but I would definitely take you to, like, I would definitely do, like, a intervention or something.
That's what he needed. That's what it sounded like.
Because that would be like...
But his intervention was moving to the United States.
I've heard of people getting divorced over like Dungeons and Dragons. But it was the opposite. It was people playing the game. And like there was too much competition between couples. Because you get so into your character that you also do a lot of those people do cosplay.
Yeah, they start to do...
I think what had happened was like... I think the guy's like girlfriend had cheated on him with like one of the other players. Like his friend. And like they were like having sex in their characters.
So no, like, circle is free from drama.
It was just, and then when they were playing, like he was the game master and he would like try and cheat or like try and, you know, like punish the guy that was sitting with his girlfriend. Like he tried to do everything to like keep him from winning. And it was, I've heard of stuff like that, but this I can get on. I would understand why she would leave him. Like dude, it's one thing if you like the game, but you're destroying the house with,
like I said, Lord of the Rings stuff. People obsessed with Lord of the Rings.
I don't know. That wouldn't be a deal breaker for me, but I think I would definitely have you have an intervention. I think I would have your parents come and you know, it would be a whole thing. I wouldn't give up on you, honey. I wouldn't give up on you.
If I wanted to be called Frodo, Bilbo Baggins.
If you started painting our apartment, I wouldn't care either because it's not our house. We just get in trouble from the
to start calling
the landlord.
Precious.
I don't mind that either. Honestly, there's really not much you could do. That would, we're good.
Sure.
Okay, so my article I wanted to bring up is from BBC.com because you know I'm obsessed with BBC. This was a few days ago, or actually no, I think it says November 24th. This was written, so we're a little behind on that this article, but. It's still very interesting. It says that a strange metal monolith has been discovered in the Utah desert by a helicopter crew, leaving local authorities baffled. Wildlife officials spotted the unusual object while counting sheep during a flyover in a remote southeastern area of the U.S. state. They said that the structure had been planted in the ground between Red Rock. There was no indication of who installed the monolith, which was about 10 to 12 feet. Tall. In an interview with local news channel KSL-TV, the helicopter pilot, Brett Hutchings, said, "That's been about the strangest thing I've come across out there in my many years of flying." Mr. Hutchings said a biologist counting bighorn sheep in the helicopter was the first one to spot the structure from the sky. He was like, whoa, turn around. And I was like, what? And he's like, there's this thing back there. We've got to go look at it, Mr. Hutchins said. I love that they quoted the way he said, like, whoa. So it says, Mr. Hutchins speculated that the monolith may have been installed by some new wave artist or a fan of 2001 Space Odyssey, the 1968 film directed by Stanley Kubrick. Imposing black monoliths created by an unseen alien species appeared in the movie based on the writing of the novelist Arthur C. Clarke. So it's like ongoing inspiration, right? Because Kubrick got the inspiration from Clarke, and then this guy might have gotten the inspiration from Kubrick or Clarke or both. The Utah Department of Public Safety Aero Bureau released images of the rectangular-shaped metal object in a news release last week. It said authorities would determine if they need to investigate further. Quote, it is illegal to install structures or art without authorization on federally managed public lands, no matter what planet you're from.
Because we own it.
The department, I know, there's like Matt's, that's your take on what you say about owning.
Because they got their name all over and you can't do that.
The department has not disclosed the exact location of the monolith, fearing explorers may try to seek it out and become stranded. Oh, people have tried
too
to
late.
Find it. Yeah,
well,
too
they
late.
Did.
You can see it on Google Maps. I mean, they're already leaking.
Well, that's how they found it.
Yeah, they're already leaking pictures. They don't want them to seek it out and become stranded. The bighorn sheep wildlife officials were counting are native to many parts of southern Utah, where the terrain is rugged, so you could get hurt if you try to explore.
It doesn't sound like there's exactly a road that led directly to it.
And the sheep could hurt you. They have horns. They're not exactly like cute.
I don't
little...
know exactly how they'll if people interact.
They look like
get...
there's rams.
Yeah, I mean,
I mean they're wild animals. You can't fuck with wild animals.
Yeah,
you can't fuck with those. I mean, I've seen them in Ireland, and they almost put a dent in my car. Like, I had to stop in my car and get out of my car because there was a ram in front of my car, and he was... you know, pawing at the ground and he had his head down, and my grandpa finally had to throw like a stick at him to get him to go. Yeah, I mean, he was going to ram our car, which we rented. It wasn't cheap. As yet, no one has claimed responsibility for installing the structure. Looking for answers, Utah Highway Patrol turned to social media, writing in a post on Instagram, quote, inquiry minds want to know, what the heck is it? Anyone? End quote. Most observers presumed it was an installation left by a sculptor, with some saying that it resembled the work of late minimalist artist John McCracken. A mysterious object resembling the plank sculpture of the late artist John McCracken has been discovered in a remote area of the Utah desert. So this was a tweet from the art newspaper. They just assumed it and they tweeted it. And it said, alien visitors or avant-garde installation. So that's it. It says the BBC is not responsible for the content of the external site, but some offered otherworldly theories, apparently in jest. So this one girl tweeted on Twitter, she said, we could just leave the Utah monolith alone and mind our own business and not summon an alien or demon or whatever during one of the worst years in our lifetimes. And then someone responded and said, 2020 isn't done with us yet. Someone else tweeted, thinking about aliens. I mean, it really does. It's metal. It's rectangular. It's sticking out of the ground.
It doesn't look like that. It does mind you.
There doesn't seem to be
the,
anything around it or written
but
on it.
The artist that you mentioned there, he is well known for putting installations up around in reserved land
I've heard of him before. But art news people should not have tweeted that in the
but
student.
As an update,
he
right?
would have come out with that.
As
that
an
was
update,
him.
It's gone.
Oh, it's gone now.
It's gone.
So who took it?
They don't know. And you know now that they found another one that popped up, like, I think in like Sweden somewhere in Europe. Another
That's
one popped up.
Nowhere near Utah.
Yeah, nowhere near Utah. But the one in Utah is gone.
I'm blinking right now. That's why there's silence.
Yeah,
so what does
I mean,
that
somebody's
mean?
Having fun.
Is that like, there's no way it's one person then. Unless it's like a group.
Well,
of
I mean,
people.
I haven't sat there and watched video, or I mean, is there...
I mean, no one's been able to see it being built, right? People must be doing it at night, and if it's rugged terrain, how is someone able to get up there and do that without getting bothered or hurt? I mean, you'd have to have a car, some sort of vehicle, or maybe your own helicopter, or your own jet or something, right? And even if that was the case, wouldn't that helicopter that's surveying that wildlife there see that? Wouldn't they see lights in the air? Wouldn't they see something?
I don't know.
I mean, you'd see an UFO or maybe...
Elon Musk fucking with us.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I just think if it was someone that really wanted it, it could be a Banksy thing. But if it's all the way in Sweden, there's no way. Because Banksy is very local. He doesn't just go all over the world and do that. He stays in the UK. Yeah. In the UK.
And you say that the one they discovered over in Europe.
Yeah, maybe someone did it. But yeah. But still, there hasn't been that much time between then and now for that to be one person or a group of people to plan that out. Unless they plan it out ahead of time.
From the time that was discovered until it was no longer there, was about a week.
And then if they discovered it, how long was it there before it was discovered?
Yeah.
They didn't say that in the article either. And I've seen multiple articles posting on this, writing about it. There hasn't been anything about, it's been here for a while, but then we discovered it. Like, you can't see how old it is or see if it's aged or... You'll be able to see, like, archaeologists will be able to see, you know, how fossils are, how long they've been there, how old the animal is. Sometimes you can see when there's a structure built, you can see how old the house is or a building is.
Just we don't know. I mean, the people that did show up and find it, you know, what did they see? What wasn't there? Were there tracks? Were there
not
tracks?
That's what I'm saying. And if it's desert, it could have been blown away. What was the weather like back at that time?
Observant or skilled are they at being able to deduce or pick apart?
And then all the way in Sweden, what's the weather like there? I have no idea how Sweden is. I don't know what it's like there. Do they have four seasons? I don't know.
All the right reason.
So that brings me to my next article, which I think is related to mysterious things. This is about the WOW signal. And if anyone listening does not know about the WOW signal came to be around, what, the 70s or before then? And that was like trying to figure out if there was other life in other galaxies or other planets. And we had this distress signal or this symbol or sound that came to us. We didn't know where it was coming from, but we knew it wasn't in our galaxy. That's how we knew there's got to be a radio waves. Radio waves are coming from a human being or an extraterrestrial. Radio waves aren't natural. We make radio waves. Radio waves are sound, a measurement of sound, but that's what they were trying to figure out. This is from phys.org. An amateur astronomer and YouTuber, Alberto Caballero, one of the founders of the Exoplanet Channel, sounds like a conspiracy channel, he has found a small amount of evidence for a source of the notorious WOW signal. In his paper uploaded to the AIR-XIVE preprint server, Caballero describes searching the Gaia database, which Gaia is like supposed to be our universe, for a possible sun-like stars that might host an exoplanet capable of supporting intelligent life. Back in 1977, astronomers were working with the Big Ear radio telescope. At the time, situated in Delaware, Ohio, recorded a unique signal from somewhere in space. It was so strong and unusual that one of the workers on the team, Jerry Eamon, famously scrawled the word "Wow!" exclamation on the printout. Despite years of work, 40 years later, and many man hours, no one has ever been able to trace the source of the signal or explain the strong, unique signal, which lasted for all of 72 seconds. That's actually a long time. It's more than a minute. Since that time, many people have suggested that the only explanation for such a strong and unique signal is extraterrestrial intelligent life. In the new effort, Caballero reasoned that if the source was some other life form, it would likely be living on an exoplanet. And if that were the case, it would stand to reason that such a life form would be living on a planet similar to Earth, like a multiverse. I believe in multiverse. One circling its own sun-like star. Pursuing this logic, Caballero began searching for the publicly available Gaia database for just that star. The Gaia database has been assembled by a team working at the Gaia Observatory run by the European Space Agency. Launched back in 2013, the project has worked steadily on assembling the map of the night sky ever created. I'm getting goosebumps. I don't know why. To date, the team has mapped approximately 1.3 billion stars.
Yeah, there's a lot out there.
In studying his search results, Caballero found what appears to fit the bill. A star, two mass. I'm not going to read the whole number. It's like a 20, it's like 20 numbers. That is very nearly a mirror image of the sun and is located in the part of the sky where the wow signal originated. He notes that there are other possible candidates in the area, but suggests that his candidate might provide the best launching point for a new research effort by astronomers who have the tools to look for exoplanets. So that's pretty interesting. I mean, the fact that he was able to find this star that's very close to that, wow, I mean, it's been 40 years. It makes sense that someone would have figured it out.
Yeah,
2013, I mean, in Europe, obviously, first.
But yeah, I think of like Close Encounters of the Third Kind. You kind of figured at some point in time, maybe somebody out there. But you know what I think I always hear when I hear that is, what does it always have to be? I mean, how do we know it's not other? How do we know we're not the aliens?
It could be just, I mean, how do we know it's not something that came from us and bounced back?
Or that.
It just came out and then it took that long to come back to us, you know. When we see stars in the sky, what we're seeing has already happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened.
So maybe the wow signal has already happened and it was just either coming from us. But I mean, if he found a star that's mirror image of our sun, it could be a reverse universe. It could be an opposite world.
Maybe like it's a warning.
I don't know. It's been 40 years, but you know, then the monolith thing, I don't know, man. I don't know. Like
there's
the monolith.
Just a lot of crazy stuff.
Just a lot of crazy stuff. Maybe they're like, you know what? There's a pandemic. This isn't looking very good. We can see what's happening in this earth. We're either going to come down and kill everyone and start over, or we're going
to
help.
Well, maybe it was like a giant thermometer just to come down and take a test. And it was like, oh, 2020?
Yeah.
We're out of here.
Yeah, maybe
what's
they
going
were
on?
Like, oh, it's so bad here. Okay, we're coming back. We're going to go to Sweden then, see what happens. Well, you know what we'll do, listeners, is Matt and I will keep track, or at least I'll try and keep track of those monoliths. Because I thought it was really interesting when we were finding out where there were pyramids. And those were all old news. But just finding out there was a pyramid in Antarctica and finding out, you know, that the ones that were built in Egypt weren't built by slaves. They were built by contractors. They were built by hardworking people. That was all something that the Romans had wanted us to know, or someone wanted us to know, that they wanted us to feel bad that, you know, or feel better that, you know, we weren't the only ones that had slavery, that the Egyptians did it too. And yeah, they probably had servants, but when I did some external research and some intensive research, I learned that, and it was actually on some sites that were talking about Black history and Middle Eastern history. It was a lot of Black Lives Matter articles that were talking about that. And it blew my mind because I thought, oh, the Egyptians had slaves and of course they're going to build those things. They were like,
well, I mean,
to do
when
it.
You look at like a movie like The Ten Commandments or
yeah.
any of those movies, that's what you see, right?
Yeah.
And set my people, Pharaoh set my people.
Yeah, and maybe know. They did. Maybe they did enslave the Jews. I mean, we're not saying that didn't happen, but I just don't think there would be a lot of motivation for those slaves to build those pyramids for nothing. Like if they didn't get to live in them, and if they were contracted and they were paid, which means that they had motivation to feed their families and build something beautiful.
Yeah,
and,
no,
and they
think,
knew
right,
it was going to
I mean,
last
a bunch
forever.
Of weak people.
There's no
be
way
able to do that.
There's no way. They're coughing on chalk. They're coughing on dust. They're, you know, they're trying to, and they were building these pulleys. They were building these cool like tools to build these things. I mean, there's several. There's a couple other structures I think I'll look up and I'll save for a future episode. My next article is still about stars. It's still about space.
Going
space. So we're leaving Utah. We went to the wow signal. Now we're going to the Christmas star. So I know not all of you guys celebrate Christmas. I really don't think we do as much. I mean, I don't as much anymore. I like to say happy holidays to people because everyone's from different walks of life. But if you are interested in astrology and space, this is something that you'd be interested in. So this is from Fox8.com, and I don't normally go on Fox channels to get information, but I thought this was an interesting article. It says that the Christmas star is to light up the night sky for the first time in 800 years, which means that, you know, that would probably be after Jesus Christ. I mean, Jesus Christ was, when was he born? He wasn't supposed to be born in December. He was supposed to be born in the summertime. The Christmas star is to light up the night sky for the first time in 800 years. That's right, during the upcoming winter solstice, Jupiter and Saturn are lining up to create an incredibly bright star of wonder, or what is known as the Christmas star, or Star of Bethlehem.
The Star of Bethlehem.
These two planets haven't appeared this relatively close together from Earth's vantage point since the Middle Ages. So that's why I haven't seen Mars close to Jupiter. Because remember, Matthew and I always try to see Venus. You can see Venus clearly. Jupiter you can see, and then Mars is usually closer to Venus in the summertime. They're a lot closer because Matt and I joke, he's from Venus, I'm from Mars, because he's a Libra and I'm an Aries. But I've been noticing that Jupiter has been popping up in my app that I have that shows the constellations. So that it says that the alignments between the two planets are rather rare, occurring every 20 years or so. But this conjunction is exceptionally rare because of how close the planets will appear to be to one another. This is an astronomer, Patrick Hartigan. He told Forbes magazine, "You'd have to go all the way back to just before dawn on March 4th, 1226, to see a closer alignment between these objects visible in the night sky. Stargazers in the northern hemisphere should turn their heads and telescopes to the southwest portion of the sky about 45 minutes after sunset to see the planets align December 21st. However, reportedly, sightings can be seen throughout the entire week. According to Forbes, a star sighting of this magnitude won't happen again until 2080. So we won't live to see that. At least I don't think I will." So yeah, I think that's kind of interesting. I think what they're saying is Northern Hemisphere, so that's probably more towards like, what, Canada or Wisconsin? Yeah, so we're good. I think you and I would probably have to go to a remote area in Michigan or Wisconsin to get a better look. Because there's so much light pollution in Chicago, we wouldn't be able to see. Even in Rogers Park where we are, there's still some light pollution, but I thought that was kind of interesting. I wanted to end on that, at least on that note, because I think, you know, for me, I love knowing about what happens in the past, and the Middle Ages was such a terrible time. It was just
It's interesting that you brought that up as the last time. I think we've also mentioned a few other times about looking up at the stars or going, you know,
what is that? What is this?
And what is this? Or, you know, like NASA Dog, we had a couple interesting stories or articles about that. And now you bring up here, it's interesting, the Star of Bethlehem. I mean, I don't know if I realized that it was an actual thing.
Star.
That's what
it was
an alignment of
the planets.
Those planets that really made that.
Yeah, and actually, I think I'm going to add in some information about Jupiter and, what was it, Jupiter and Saturn? Yeah. Because I think, you know, with the retrograde things going on and the moons being in different zodiac signs, I'm wondering astrologically how that's going to affect people when those planets are aligned. Because some people can go through retrograde differently. It depends on what type of moon you were born under. The retrograde doesn't really affect me that much, because I wasn't born under a full moon. I think I was born under a waxing moon. But if you're born under a full moon or a new moon, it definitely affects you. I think you were born under one. You have your menopause sometimes. And men usually have, their hormones change every 33 days. So for women, it's every 30 days. For men, it's every 33 days. Your hormones fluctuate and change. But I'm wondering if the Star of Bethlehem, that was the best place to be able to see that star. It was the shiniest star in the sky. And I don't know if they got it confused with the North Star, if they thought that was the North Star, or if it is the North Star. But I'm excited to see it. I think December 21st, they said, after sunset. So we'll have to maybe plan and maybe driving up there. I think we're actually...
We love those celestial phenomena, astrologicals.
Are you going to be out of town that day?
No, I don't know.
I wonder if you're going to be in Philadelphia.
No.
We'll have to check. I'll have to check with Matthew. Okay, you're home. So maybe we can try a little road trip.
Yeah, maybe we can try to
zip out of here. Yeah, bring some blankets and, you know, get cozy and look and see if we can see it. I don't think we're going to see it in a city at all. It's not possible. But, so I wanted to share with you guys those topics. I thought they were really fun and interesting. I like talking about stuff like that, about space and mysteries. And I know that I relish in saying, it's a mystery, leave it alone. You don't have to figure it out. That's why it's beautiful. But there's that little nagging voice in my head that's like, dig deeper. Maybe you can figure
always
it out.
Always dig deep. Always question.
Yeah, always question. And maybe come to a conclusion, but then realize that that's your opinion and that you don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole and assume that you're right. Don't think that you're right on those mysteries. Just enjoy the mystery. Enjoy solving it, trying to solve it. And if you can't, that's fine. But I'm not going to wait till 2080 when I'm 108 years old to see it. I mean, I don't know. 2080, that's a long time. That's a long time.
Just like I'm sure somebody said, 2020 is a long time away from
now.
It is.
I mean, from the Middle Ages, yeah. 1226, that's a long time from here, for sure. I mean, the fact that there were smart people back then that still survived and were able to birth people like Elon Musk is amazing to me. And the Dark Ages. I mean, the Dark and Middle Ages were like the saddest time. I mean, even Egypt went through the Dark Ages. Almost every country's been through.
Yeah, I mean, we spent our time, doing those things. And
yeah, and now we're in 2020, and we got rid of Cheeto Man, and, you know, we're making strides now.
Yeah, we can rise up, people together.
Yeah, and Biden says wear a goddamn mask.
Wear a goddamn mask.
So we're going to end the podcast with telling you guys to stay happy and stay healthy, and wear a goddamn mask.
Wear a goddamn mask. Be safe, be well, we love you.
I'm Megan.
I'm Matt.
And you're listening to The Night Owl.